No technology from me. Can I first of all thank you, Patrick, for such a generous introduction. There have been occasions when I've been introduced as who represents women and other criminals. So it was rather nice to hear you describe me somewhat differently. It's always Confucius who's attributed with the great Chinese wish that we live in interesting times. And we certainly do live in interesting times. Someone must have wished it upon us all. We are daily faced with new challenges, and the pace of scientific and technological development is increasing all of the time. It was exciting to listen to our two previous speakers speaking about the developments which are soon to be realized in the completion of the full sequencing of the Human Genome Project. And it's undoubtedly true that the benefits it promises are considerable. It will give us greater understanding of how our own bodies function, how our genes contribute to the diseases we suffer, and how we age. It should lead to major advances in the ways in which we deal with disease and may affect our attitudes to aging, reproduction, and how we live our lives. There are many promises of new areas opening up, as we've already heard. They offer us the potential for doing things in new ways. We can expect in the near future to be able to both treat disease more effectively and identify it earlier, as you heard Martin and Mike say. New targeted drugs and therapies are going to be developed and tailored to an individual's genetic profile, resulting in fewer unwanted side effects. Developments in genetic testing will enable us to identify genetic predispositions to disease, as has already been indicated, and while the ability to use genetic data in epidemiological research offers the hope of understanding relationships between genetic, environmental, and lifestyle factors, we will also know more and more about the whole causes of disease. Of course, many of these developments raise important ethical, legal, and social issues. It's important that in these times of rapid change that we have in place an effective framework of regulation and guidance against which advances may take place to the benefit and in the interest of us all, and in ways that set the right context for the future. And we also need to ensure that scientific advances do not race away from social and ethical debate or cross boundaries of public acceptability. You really do have to carry your public with you. Scientists, industry, and government have all learned the hard way that people cannot, and indeed should not, be forced to accept something over which they have major concerns. We saw that only too well recently. I was at a political gathering in Germany a few months ago, and there were speakers from different parts of the world, and one of them was Shimon Peres, and it was not on this subject. But it was interesting that he was speaking about science, and he said at one stage, philosophers do not change the world. Scientists change the world and then persuade philosophers to change their minds. What people are likely to find, while people are likely to find that these new developments in human genetics are exciting once they have crossed the threshold and are more knowledgeable, they really do need to be taken on that journey with some care. People are excited where they see these developments have a medical or health application, but they still feel that the whole business is somewhat scary. Some feel that there is something about their DNA that defines them uniquely, and that making use of that person's DNA for research may be viewed by them as tampering with something that is in their essence, that is in the essence of human life, and that defines our humanity. And that is something that we have to really grapple with and engage with. There are also questions about whether children should be tested for genetic disorders, which they may have preferred not to know about if given the choice, and concerns about the possible effects of some types of genetic testing or gene therapy on subsequent generations. Others feel that extensive genetic testing may result in widespread discrimination and fear the development of an underclass excluded from both insurance and then subsequently from employment. While most people, when they think about it, and I've had these conversations since my appointment to this role, most people, when they think about it, would accept that we are more than our genes. Many misconceptions and concerns are nevertheless real for large numbers of people. There may also be concerns about who has access to this information about me, about that individual, and what they can do about it, and what those who have access to that information might do with it. In particular, many seem suspicious of the motivations of big business in this field, particularly in relation to issues such as insurance and patenting and control over genetic data. However, it must be remembered that there are also large numbers of people who are affected by debilitating and often untreatable diseases, and they are desperate from already the communications I've had from many. They are desperate for these new advances to materialize as fast as possible. And so different interests have different anxieties and different speeds at which they would like to see this progress. And so what is clear is that public views, both concerns and desires for health solutions, must be taken into account. Now, the problem of BSE and other high-profile issues have undoubtedly damaged the relationship between science, government, and the public, and resulted in the development of a deep public mistrust of industry, of scientists and of politicians, and even in the wake of stories about hospitals keeping tissues and organs without adequate permission. To some extent, the medical profession too are at the receiving end of this distrust. And in recognising this, the government decided at the beginning of last year to carry out a public consultation on developments in the biosciences, together with a review of the advisory and regulatory framework for biotechnology. The further difficulties that arose as a result of the handling of the GM food issue only served to highlight how overdue such a review was. The public consultation found the following. People generally have a low awareness of scientific and technological advances, but they do understand the basic principles of biology and of genetics. Although people see medical advances as being of the greatest benefit, they're suspicious of all advances in biotechnology where they cannot identify applications that are of direct benefit to human beings. And people see regulation as being extremely important because of concerns over the safety of new developments. At the same time, many feel that they do not know enough about existing regulations. A robust regulatory system that is transparent, regularly reviewed, and incorporates random checks is essential in order to win public confidence. Government advisory groups are, believe it or not, are a trusted mechanism for decision making. The public actually do want government advisory groups to operate in this field and actually have faith in them, but they want to see the membership more broadly based. Scientists and healthcare professionals are seen as particularly important contributors to decision making. But what came out of the review was that there was a widespread demand for better public information and prompt public information. And again, government advisory groups, scientists, healthcare professionals, and consumer and environmental groups to be trusted to provide that kind of information to the public. They want to develop that relationship of trust. And what we discovered was that the media, that retailers and industry were not trusted. And so there's a job of work to be done in establishing trust. So those conclusions really meant that the current arrangements had to be looked at and scrutinized. It's clear they were too fragmented, particularly on the health side. They were difficult to understand, that they lacked transparency, that they didn't take on board the views of all the potential stakeholders, and the broader environmental and ethical considerations. And it was felt that the current arrangements were insufficiently flexible to respond to the sort of speed of change, the fast-moving nature of biotechnology developments. The government concluded that a new approach was needed and decided to set up a new comprehensive strategic advisory structure for biotechnology, which took much greater account of the views of the public, of environmentalists, of ethicists, of the industry, of medical practitioners, patients, and consumers. And as a result, the Human Genetics Commission and its sister body, the Agriculture and Environment Biotechnology Commission, that's the AEBC, were set up. And that's where I come in. The role of the Commission is to consider the potential impact of developments in genetics for human beings and for their healthcare, in particular the ethical, legal, and social aspects of these developments. There is a board. The Commission basically reflects a wide range of disciplines and backgrounds. The membership of this Commission has been drawn from the field of ethics, from law, industry. There are patients, there are consumers, social scientists, geneticists, and other healthcare professionals. And members have been appointed, as we would now expect, on merit rather than as representatives of particular interest groups, and chosen for their expertise and for their personal contribution that they will be able to make on these issues. So the Nolan principles were followed in that process. And I will tell you that I applied for this job, and I'm very delighted that I was the person appointed to do it. You're probably wondering why this field needs a criminal lawyer. I think that, and I hope it might be said, that one of the things that lawyers can do is ask difficult questions. And in my experience in a number of quasi-judicial roles, it means that I can seek to balance some of the different concerns and considerations that may be involved, and also bring my experience in the field of human rights to these issues. And I hope my experience as a communicator and advocate in making this a much more understood field and where public debate will take place with the conversation being more accessible for those who are not themselves scientists. And so in doing this work, we felt very strongly that there should be a real engagement with the general public. The Commission will want to think about what questions need to be asked and what important issues need to be considered, both now and in the future, and to develop advice to ministers on how these things might be addressed. We've been asked to look at the big picture of where developments in human genetics are heading and what regulatory and advisory frameworks will be required now and in the future. And because of the international nature of science, industry, and indeed government, the Commission will need to take account of developments in research, new applications, and changes in regulation at international as well as national level. The whole way in which we're hoping to conduct our work is really about openness. We'll have a website, it's already been launched, there's going to be an advanced publication of our agenda. And I'm a firm believer that you really do get the public on board if they know what you're up to, what you're doing. And I do not think our business should be conducted always behind closed doors. And for those reasons, we're going to hold quite a number of our meetings in public. There'll be open meetings to which the public will be invited. And one of those will take place next month on the 10th of April. We're going to have frequent press releases and press briefings and an annual report of the activities of the Commission, and it's my intention to try and reach out into parts of the world that are not normally reached. One of the interesting things that I've discovered in my life as a communicator is that very often, for example, issues of health, issues of law are well addressed, for example, in women's magazines, places that might seem rather lowly to the scientific world, but in fact it's there that you can channel into families information which will be very important in the contribution they can make then in turn to the public debate. So a crucial part of our work is going to be in developing advice, and we will be promoting public debate through public meetings and through the media. and keeping people informed of what it is that you, the scientists, and those who are involved in the scientific world are doing. And we're at the moment consulting with the general public to make sure that we're basically going to be addressing the right issues, asking them, what do you think the questions are, and what are the issues concerning you, so that they can add to the list as we currently see it. So just finally to say, what are the questions which the Commission will want to consider in its work? I'm going to give you just a brief example. We want to ask questions such as, is genetic information any different or perceived to be different to any other personal or medical information? And if so, what makes it different? How adequate are current legal protections and safeguards to regulate the obtaining, the processing, and the using of personal genetic information to protect privacy or prevent exploitation or unfair discrimination, for example, in research, healthcare, insurance, and employment? What new potential is there for linking genetic information with other data about individuals, and where might this lead? And of course, are there new ethical, legal, or social implications of using genetic information? What might the future hold? What other applications could develop in the future, and what implications might they have for the individual? And what are the implications for our National Health Service? What are the implications in terms of ultimately resourcing of this? Can we ensure that in the whole business of genetic testing, that it doesn't just become available to those who, for example, might be able to afford it, and we have those who will be left behind in the choices that they can make about their own lives? These are the kinds of issues that the Commission will need to address, and I'm sure you will appreciate that we have first to clarify those questions before we decide on our strategy. And if any of you are interested, we would be welcoming you at our public meeting on the 10th of April. I don't think that we're pretending that we're going to come up with quick fixes or instant responses to difficult issues. We will be carefully defining our priorities and looking for long-lasting solutions. It's our role to look beyond individual issues and seek to provide advice on fundamental principles against which advances in this field can take place. We will be scanning the horizon to gauge when future developments are likely to materialise so that we're involved from the very earliest stages in helping to shape the way that they might be addressed. And I think that with already our having had an initial meeting and I have spent some time with different members of the Commission and recognising their expertise, that with that resource, through wide public consultation and working transparently, keeping the public informed about what's going on and involving them in the decision-making process, the Commission can make a valuable contribution, I hope, to what I see as being one of the great projects of this century. I think it's going to be of enormous benefit to society, and it's one of the great advances on our doorstep. And it's important, therefore, that we do that hand in hand with the general public. Thank you very much.